Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we are focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey everybody, welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and today my guest is Trevor Hubbs. Trevor served for 6 years in the Army before becoming an ROTC instructor, and he's now the director of the Armed Forces Initiative through Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. And he's here today to talk about the Armed Forces Initiative program and how it helps veterans get outdoors. So welcome to the show, Trevor. I'm glad to have you here.
Yeah, thank you so much for the invite. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So for the listeners who maybe aren't familiar with you and your background, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, joined the Army after high school, airborne infantry, spent some time active duty, and then transitioned over to the National Guard, where I was an ROTC instructor at Eastern Illinois University, which is a program I highly recommend for everybody. It was a great way to transition out of the military. Got my master's and became a business consultant, primarily in like the $5 to $15 million range. Did that for about 5 years and started volunteering with an organization called Backcountry Hunters and Anglers as part of their Armed Forces Initiative. Got a pretty big grant in 2019 to where they're like, all right, well, you need to start thinking about bringing on a full-time employee. You can't all be volunteers. And it's like seven of us that were really doing most of the work. And they decided by vote that I'm the guy who's going to quit his job and be the full-time person. So now here I am.
That's interesting how that transition takes place. So I want to get more into that in a little bit here, but just transitioning from the military into any career, sometimes for veterans is a difficult thing to do. And so when you have someone like yourself transitioning, getting into the ROTC field, it's still like you got one foot in and you got one foot out at the same time. Like how did that transition work out for you?
So you kind of have that choice where you're going to – not really a choice. I mean, you have a recruiter, you have drill sergeant, you have ROTC. When you kind of make the – you make E6 in the Army and you got to go do one of them. And everybody wants to be a drill sergeant because it's so much fun. And then I got slotted to go do ROTC, which it was also a lot of fun. It was just different. But so like my last 2 years in the Army, I got paid to go to school to teach a small ROTC unit, about 70 cadets, how to go be officers one day. And then got my degree in history because that's what my consultant, academic consultant said would be the easiest based on like the credits they gave me for my Army time and stuff like that. So I have my undergrad in history and didn't really know what I wanted to do when I got out after that. So went ahead and got a master's degree in business management, which is like the version of an MBA for like people that aren't smart. Like they take all the finance classes out and they add like psychology classes and stuff to make it a little easier, which helped me a lot. Supposed to be an 18-month program, took me 2 years because I failed some classes anyway. But yeah, then started doing business consulting primarily in the construction kind of work. So a lot of guys that like started their own business out of high school or were kind of like accidentally successful. And then now all of a sudden it's 5 years and they're doing $5 million worth of business and they have no idea how. So they'd hire my company and my company would send me and I'd go work for those clients for, you know, 60, 90, sometimes 120 days and kind of build them a marketing plan, build them an operations plan, whatever they really needed. But to get back to like the actual transition, like it was tough. I learned that I am terrible at interviews. Like I was always good going to the board in the Army, suck at real interviews. Still not good at them. Like it's something I dramatically have to practice every time. So.
Yeah. And that's the thing when, especially people who've been in the Army or any branch of the military for such a long time, they get out of high school. Maybe that's the first real job is getting into the military and they never really had to do an interview. Mm-hmm. And so it takes a lot of practice, to get back into it. But, we're going to take a short commercial break here. When we return, we're going to talk more about the Armed Forces Initiative and everything that you guys are doing. So stay tuned.
This message is from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Veterans, Note the upcoming August 10th date to apply for PACT Act benefits. The law expands benefits for veterans exposed to burn pits and toxics while serving. If you apply before that date and VA grants your application, VA will likely backdate your benefits to the date of the bill signing, August 10, 2022. This means VA will pay you the amount you would have received from August 10, 2022 to the date we grant your application. If you're not ready to submit a claim by then, you can submit an intent to file and still receive the same effective date. Learn more at va.gov/PACT.
I want to get into the Armed Forces Initiative. And so, Trevor, can you give us a little bit of the background, like what inspired the creation of the Armed Forces Initiative within the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers organization, and what spurred that to come to fruition?
Sure. Yeah. So Backcountry Hunters and Anglers is a conservation organization similar to like a Teddy Roosevelt Conservation Partnership or a Ducks Unlimited. Like, we focus on public land and waters access, so places to go hunt and fish. Every year, Backcountry Hunters and Anglers does a survey for their membership, asking things like, what's most important to you? What part of the country do you live in? Are you male? Are you female? Just trying to grab general demographics. In 2018 was the first time we asked, are you a veteran or a member of the military community? So active duty, National Guard, reserves, all that stuff. What was interesting is 12.5% of BHA members in 2018 met that kind of military community demographic key there. And that's unique because most of the United States, like the general U.S. population, depending on what survey you kind of look at, is between 5% and 7% member of the military community. So kind of accidentally, BHA was already attracting more than double the national average. So we started digging into, and we, like being BHA, I guess, the royal we, like I wasn't involved at that point. So they started digging into like why that is, and they came up with a whole bunch of different answers, right? But the biggest or the most important piece that they discovered is not only were we double the national average of veterans, right, as a membership, but the veterans we had were in the majority of our kind of volunteer leadership roles. So they were running habitat cleanups, planting sagebrush, cleaning up riverbeds, all these like volunteer-led projects that are essential to make the nonprofit work. So interesting.
It came to be because of the existing group of people who already were involved in the organization.
They're
just natural selection, really.
Absolutely. Right? They just were kind of key volunteers. So we started asking around, and I was a regular BHA member. They asked me and a couple other folks that had checked yes on the veteran question to come in and kind of run some studies, run some programs. And that's where the Armed Forces Initiative came from, which is basically designed to just get more members of the military community into conservation, into hunting, into fishing. In 2019, we got a pretty big grant to where they're like, all right, well, let's talk about hiring somebody and really expanding this program. Because we were taking about 50 people out a year, just teaching them to hunt mule deer or fish for bass or whatever. Nothing really fancy, just kind of feeling our way through this. And then in 2020, after that grant, we did our first major event. We did about 300 people in 2020, taking them out into the backcountry, teaching them to hunt, teaching them to fish, teaching them just conservation kind of basics. And then last year, 2021, we ended up doing 2022, we did 1,700 people. And then this year, we're on track to do 2,300. So.
And in 2020, you said it was around 300 people? Is that yes. What you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I got to imagine that was a pretty crazy year as well, just given everything that was going on in the world at the time during the pandemic and everything, people wanting to get outside, just not really having places to go, but here we are. And that might've, you know, helped push more people outside.
Right? Oh, absolutely. It's incredible the amount of growth we've had. We've gone from 12% of the regular BHA membership to now we're close to 47%. It's like 46.89 or something like that last time I ran the numbers. But it's growing like wildfire, and we have chapters in 46 states now, doing well over 100 events a year. Again, like 2,300 people this year is what we're taking out. It's crazy.
That's amazing. And those people, you know, if I know when, like, I first went hunting, the very first time I went hunting, it wasn't like I just, you know, picked up a gun and walked outside and went hunting. You know, like I had someone with me who showed me, okay, this is where you can hunt, and, you know, all the things that go along with it. Obviously I took the hunter's education course, but, you know, like anything you learn in school, like there's the classroom stuff and then there's like real life.
Yeah.
And like what you actually need to know. You know, so I had somebody with me to kind of guide me and like show me what to do and everything. And that was super helpful, because without that, I'd feel kind of lost. Like I wouldn't know exactly what I was supposed to do. And so, you know, having an organization like this, because I got to imagine there's some people out there who maybe don't know other people who hunt, and like they want to get into it. How do they get into it without having that guidance to help them out? Right. So having an organization like this, I think would be super helpful in that regard. Right?
Yeah. I mean, that's what we've seen. It's pretty interesting just how many, like there's a term in conservation called R3, which is retention, recruitment, reactivation for like new hunters. We don't really do the recruitment so much. I mean, most of our people have gone hunting before. We do, about 10% of them have never hunted, but we do a lot of the reactivation, because what it looks like, particularly in like the infantry, Cav Scouts, Special Operations, is we've been at war for 20 years, where it's year of training, year of deployment, year of rest, right? You just don't have time to go hunt, right? So if you just take Private Hubs, grew up Southern Missouri, like love to hunt and fish, bass, you know, catfish, whatever you've got, you go to basic training, you're not hunting and fishing there because you're getting yelled at the whole time. Then you go to airborne school, then you go to Fort Benning. So I'd never been to North Carolina. I know they have an elk herd. I know there's saltwater fishing now. There's like trout and mountain streams. There's bears, there's pigs, all kinds of cool stuff. But first thing, like I didn't hunt the whole time I was in, because I never got the courage to ask, hey, platoon sergeant who gets paid to yell at me every day, do you know where I can hunt and fish in North Carolina? First of all, even if he wanted to answer, which he doesn't have to, right? He got here 6 months before I did, so he doesn't know either, right? And then every 3 years, you just move again, and you move again, and you're always in a new state. And before long, you have guys who have been in the Army, whether it's 4 years or 20 years, that haven't hunted or fished the whole time, even though they like to do it beforehand. And it's interesting.
Yeah, and each state and even some local municipalities have their own rules and regulations as far as where you can hunt, when you can hunt, you know, the licensing requirements and all these different types of things. And if you're moving every few years to a different location, it's like you got to re-educate yourself on all of that every single time. So yeah, I got to imagine that's a pretty difficult thing to do while you're serving, is figuring out all of that stuff. Again, unless you have somebody who is local to the area, who knows the area, knows what to do. And then, you know, in this case, that reintegration, getting people back into it after however long they've been out of it. I know personally, I haven't hunted in years. Not because of a lack of interest or anything like that. It's just the time issues.
Sure.
And, you know, raising a family and all that kind of stuff, not to, you know, say, oh, raising a family is such a hard thing and a terrible thing or anything like that. That's not what I'm trying to say, but it's, you know, it's a time commitment.
Oh, yeah.
And so you have to prioritize stuff. And so, you know, you get to a point in your life, though, where it's like, okay, well, I have some time is freed up. I have some time. I can go back and do this, but where, when, how, you know, all this stuff. So, you know, having this resource available, I think, is super valuable to be able to get back into it. And probably build some camaraderie along the way too.
Right? Oh, absolutely. So like the goal of each of these events, is we just call it building conservationists within the military community. So that means a bunch of different stuff, but really how these events go is it's about the teaching. So you show up, we do introductions. Everybody talks about where they're from, what they did in the Army, what they do now, just yada, yada, yada. You teach them so we just got done with, I think we did like 10 turkey camps across the U.S. because spring turkey season just happened. So it's, hey, this is entry-level turkey hunting. This is the gear you need. This is where we're going to be in the country. This is the habitat you're looking at. We normally bring in a biologist or an ecologist to talk about, in this case, turkey mating season, or like, where are you going to find turkeys? What food do they eat? Why you should go here? We give them access to OnX, which is like a software program that shows you where public land to hunt is in your area. So when they go home, whether that's to Montana, Idaho, North Carolina, wherever, you still have this app that'll show you where all the public land is in your state where you can go hunt, which is great. Then we teach them all the gear they need. And then physically you do a mentor one-to-one is our kind of like goal, but we sometimes do one mentor for two hunters, just depending on how many volunteers we can get. And you physically take them out hunting with the goal of teaching, right? It's, hey, this is how you call a turkey. This is why we're setting up in this bush, because over there, there's a lot of feed and we saw the turkeys roost in that tree. And this, again, we want them to leave this event knowing everything they need to know to go replicate this experience either the next weekend or the next season. And we want them to have a local community of people with the same, you know, life skills or life experiences so far as them, right? So if we can do those two things, right, you have a bunch of friends, a bunch of buddies, all veterans, all know, all have an interest in hunting and fishing, and you all now know at least enough to be dangerous hunting and fishing, then the last piece is really, do you know, can I teach them enough about conservation? Like, where does your hunting license dollars goes? How is all this public land funded? Why do you have access to it? Things like that, to where not only do you enjoy hunting and fishing now, do you have a group you can go with, but you can also go to your local Department of Natural Resources meeting and say, as a veteran, I think we should have more turkeys, so I want you to vote this way on something. Something like that, right?
Sure, yeah. And I think it's important, too, you pointed on something here or touched on something that I wanted to point out. Is that the money that you spend for your hunting license and other things like that do go towards conservation efforts. And there's people out there, maybe even people who are listening to this episode right now, who maybe don't understand that and think that, you know, hunting is this immoral thing. It's this terrible thing because you're going out and you're killing animals and all that kind of stuff. But a lot of the funds and a lot of the resources that go into the actual process of taking the animals actually does improve the environment that they live in. And overall, it is a positive thing for the animals who live in that environment. Right?
Yeah, it's absolutely correct. I mean, the North American model of wildlife conservation is one of the most successful models in the world. I mean, there's a reason that we still have species. Like, we came close to exterminating, and we did exterminate a bunch of species, but we figured it out, whereas Europe kind of never did, where like Africa is still struggling to figure it out. But like, in North America, if you would like to recreate outdoors, like, there's a system to where the money you pay to do that, your license fees, taxes on firearms, all pays to make sure that there's still deer in the forest, that there's still turkeys, ducks, all this stuff. It's a pretty good system.
Exactly. So we're going to take another quick commercial break here. But when we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of the programs and activities that are offered by the Armed Forces Initiative and some of the benefits that come from the program. So stay tuned. Calling all passionate patriots. The Patriot Box is a testament to our love for this great nation we call home. Founded by veterans, they believe in celebrating the values that built America: courage, imagination, and unrelenting determination. The Patriot Box curates hand-selected boxes packed with useful, fun, and delightful American-made products carefully chosen to honor our forefathers and embody the spirit of our nation. Join Patriot Box's community of compatriots and receive your very own Patriot Box, a treasure chest of proudly American-made goods delivered right to your doorstep. Each box represents a celebration of American craftsmanship supporting local small businesses that embody the spirit of passionate entrepreneurs across the country. But it doesn't stop there. With every Patriot Box purchased, you're also making a difference. A portion of the proceeds goes to support veteran charities honoring those who have served our country. Join them in embracing the pride of living in the greatest country on earth. Visit the link in our show notes to learn more and get your own Patriot Box delivered with pride. Trevor, I'd like to talk with you a little bit more about some of the programs or the activities, some of the things that you guys actually are doing with the veterans and the military community in terms of the conservation and the outdoors, you know, getting people out there and how all of that works.
Yeah. Shoot.
Yeah, sure. So what are the, you know, basically the process of getting into the program, and what are some of the actual, you know, events that you hold, and what do you actually do with the veterans once they're involved? I know you're talking a little bit about teaching a little bit earlier, but are there specific programs that you have, involved there?
Yeah. So we do a bunch of different stuff. Again, I kept the commander's intent intentionally vague, where it's build conservationists within the military community. So, right, so we have hundreds of kind of local volunteers at the state level. We have installation-based clubs. Fort Bragg is a club. Camp Lejeune has a club. Camp Pendleton has a club. Just so wherever, like, the goal is wherever you get stationed in your military career, like, you'll, there's someone there who can teach you how to hunt and fish. But yeah, we do all sorts of events. So like Colorado, for example, you have Fort Carson there, but Colorado is kind of notorious for having strange or hunting regs that are difficult to understand. So their thing is, I trust the local volunteers to tell me what the military community needs. And Colorado says, my people need to know how to hunt or how to recreate in Colorado. They need to understand the rules. So every quarter they do just a Zoom call open to anyone who wants to participate, where they're going to run through the Colorado regulations, what an A tag is, what a B tag is, when hunting seasons are, what opportunities are available for veterans at discounted tag rates or whatever the price is, because a lot of states have discounted stuff for veterans or disabled veterans. Sure. So we do that. But then in Alaska, like, it's different. People in Alaska, like, hunting and fishing is such an ingrained part of the culture that it's hard to not understand how when you get stationed up there. The biggest thing they see is now you're not hunting a 200-pound white-tailed deer. You're hunting a 2,000-pound, you know, moose or 1,200-pound moose or whatever. Like, the biggest thing is moose, caribou. It's so readily available. But when you get one on the ground, what do you do with it? It's just a lot more meat. So they have animals that are donated, right, like roadkill animals donated by the state police in Alaska. And every quarter they do a big game breakdown class. Again, it's open to anyone. They move the location from Joint Base Elmdorf-Richardson. They go to Kodiak. They go to Wainwright, all over the state. And they break down a moose. They break down a caribou. And they can send that meat home with people to attend. So it's, one, you get to see how all this is broken down. Two, you get a little bit of taste of, like, man, maybe I do want to go caribou hunting next year. Maybe I should get that $15, you know, sure, tag that's for veterans. Like, pretty interesting. Like, it's one of the biggest kind of tragedies in the Army is people get stationed in Alaska for 3 years and they don't hunt or fish. And it's like the pristine, one of the best areas in the world for it.
Right, exactly. And one of the things I've always wondered about, I've never been to Alaska, never hunted up there, obviously, but I've seen the shows, I've seen the footage and videos and everything like that of people who have gone hunting up there, and they take one of these enormous animals, like you were just talking mm-hmm. about. And the first thought that went through my mind is, what the hell are you going to do with this?
Yeah.
Because, like, how do you move it? You know, how do you, you know, what do you do unless you have, like, an army of people who are going to help you move it? Like, what do you do with it? So yeah, having those kind of classes and that type of training to just help walk you through that process, especially if you're from a different part of the country, mm-hmm. and you don't have anything anywhere near as big as that in your local area where you came from, then I have to imagine that those classes are just going to be super informative and helpful in getting those people, you know, out into the outdoors and taking part in some of the hunting efforts that are going on.
Yeah. Right? Oh, absolutely. And it's a step-by-step process, right? Like, first, I need to get you comfortable with the concept of hunting in a state that you didn't grow up in, where you don't know where to go. Once I can get you comfortable, then I can take you hunting there, right? Or one of our volunteers sure. can take you. Like, so we're doing, we have 10 people going on a caribou hunt, like, in above the Arctic Circle later this year in August. So it's teaching them where to hunt, teaching them how to get there, transportation to and from the field, what gear they need, and then actually walking them through the process of harvesting an animal, breaking it down, carrying it out on their backs. And then we'll do a little bit of cooking at each one. We try to, depends. So we have had events where you don't get, like, we do a tuna fishing trip when you don't catch tuna. So we're going to cook something. But anyway, we try to cook something of what we're actually targeting every time, just kind of give them that full kind of field to table experience. The next step then is, all right, so now you understand how to hunt. You understand a little bit of why to hunt and the conservation kind of principles, the North American model of wildlife conservation. Now it's how do you as a veteran use your voice to improve conservation or contribute to the conversation. A good example of that is last year we took 18 people into the boundary waters in Minnesota where there was this copper sulfide mine, which any of these mines, basically what it is there's a tiny bit of ore in the area, but they got to take these big chunks of rock and they dump them in big tanks of sulfuric acid, each away the rock, and then you have just the copper left. So really what it is you use this large amount of extreme contaminant, sulfuric acid, adjacent to this kind of national watershed, the Boundary Waters Wilderness Area, which is the most visited wilderness area in the United States. And when you write your congressman or your senator or whatever, the kind of canned response you were getting, this is back in 2020, the canned response is, unfortunately, I'm going to even though you don't want me to, I'm going to support the mining effort because it's essential for national security, which is interesting because it was in this case, it was a Peruvian or is a South American mining company that already had a contract to sell all the goods to China. So you're going to, I get it. National defense is a real easy, like easy button for a politician to hit, but with veterans, maybe we look into things a little more. But so the sure. key for that trip was saying like, hey, look, yeah, I can show you a place where you can catch 100 fish a day. With fish that have never seen a lure, have never seen a fly rod before, and you just have this amazing time, and it's open to everyone. As long as you're an American citizen, just go there. It's your public property. You can just go do it. And then again, how do you write to your congressman, write to your elected representatives, and say, as a veteran, I do not think you should mine here because this is important for national security, but maybe not how you think. It's important for veterans' outdoor recovery, which is a whole nother piece of what we do, is kind of that like mental health therapy or adjunct therapy is the official term. But and then they ended up putting a ban on that mining operation, in part because of the work BHA does and AFI does, because if you could show that these key places are essential to the military community, it's kind of suicide for any politician to go against the military right now.
Yeah, I mean, that is true. And I think that's one good thing that we have going for us is in the military and veteran communities is that there is so much support for the military veterans these days throughout just the general public as opposed to maybe, during the Vietnam era sure. where it wasn't the case. And now, like you said, if a politician is going to, go against that and, do something that is going against the military or the veterans, that's just career suicide right there. Like they're done. They're not getting reelected.
Exactly.
Right? Because I don't like to get into too much into politics, but it doesn't matter if you're on the left or the right of any issue. Generally, people are pretty pro-military these days, at least for the individuals, maybe not for the actions that are
absolutely
the conflicts and all that.
Yeah. Right?
So you're absolutely right with all of that.
It's really interesting. So, and one of the other things that kind of pushed this as far as like the veterans adjunct therapy piece is during the last couple months of President Trump's presidency, he passed Accelerating Veterans Outdoor Recovery Act or Recovering Outdoors Act. I'm not sure which order those words go in, but essentially it mandates the use of federal public land across the United States for use as veterans adjunct therapy. So what we've seen is, and everybody knows, like the 22 soldiers committing suicide a day, which you could tear that stat apart if you really want to. There's a lot of books about how it's kind of a false narrative, which maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Again, I didn't take the math classes in college because I think they're hard. But but if you read the most recent suicide numbers from the VA, which the study I was looking at, I think it was 2020 was the last numbers I've looked at. Like a male veteran age 18 to 35 is 63% more likely to commit suicide than his civilian counterpart. Like whether it's 22 a day or 18 right. or 24, like that statistic, the 63% is an incredibly scary thing, right? Like, so if we can help reduce those numbers of self-harm or suicide or just like depression, all these like kind of side effects of PTSD, traumatic brain injury, survivor's guilt, whatever you want to call it, by being outside, like it's a win for the military community. It's a win for conservation because you're engaging them, right? In another sure. way to serve the United States. Because if you look at it specifically, like public lands and waters, like you don't have that in Europe. You kind of have it in Canada, but it's called like crown lands. And if it's named after a foreign monarch, is it really public? But the U.S. states, I say the United States is unique in that aspect. Like nobody joined the army or the military or the Marines, or whatever, because of the U.S.'s public land. But by defending this, like it is one of the things that makes America unique in the world, is that no matter where you are, if you're willing to work harder, walk farther, carry more weight on your back, you can go kill an amazing white-tailed deer or have a fantastic elk or moose hunt. Like it's just there for everyone.
It is. And like you said, that is part of what makes up America. Mm-hmm. We have unique opportunities here that people don't have other places throughout the world. Whether, even just talking about the public lands, certain lands throughout the rest of the world, they don't have these opportunities to hunt or fish or just enjoy the outdoors the way we can here in places like you were saying earlier, who have been in some cases largely untouched by other people. Like, fish have never seen some of these the lures that are going into the water.
Yeah.
Like that may not exist in certain places throughout the world. So, you know, we are very fortunate, and you know, we all signed up to serve and protect and defend this land. And so now that we are out, or even while we're still in, we should be able to enjoy and reap the benefits of what this country has to offer. So with that, I want to take a quick break again, but when we get back, I want to get more into some of the mental health efforts and the things that the benefits that come from getting outdoors and participating in some of this. So stay tuned. Attention military veterans and families. Are you ready to conquer the civilian job market? Monster Resume Writing Service is here to support your transition. Their team of certified resume writers specializes in helping veterans like you. They'll create a custom resume that highlights your military experience, translating it into a language that civilian employers understand. They understand the unique challenges you face, from navigating career shifts to finding the right opportunities. That's why their experts will tailor your resume to your specific career goals, ensuring that you stand out from the competition. They optimize your resume with keywords to match job postings and past recruiters' screening software. Monster Resume Writing Service is dedicated to helping you succeed. Visit the link in this episode's show notes to learn more about how they can help you take the next step in your civilian career. Just a little while ago, we were talking about the mental health benefits of the aspect of getting them outside and all that kind of stuff. So, Trevor, I want to talk a little bit more about that. Can you tell us a little bit more about the ways that the engaging in conservation efforts and outdoor recreation, hunting and fishing, those types of things, how does that contribute to the well-being or the mental health of these people getting outside?
Sure. I love telling this story because it's not one that people think about a lot. All right. And even going to the VA, who's supposed to be the kind of the authority on, you know, veterans' mental health and just veterans' health in general, they kind of, it's new for them as well, but it is not actually a new concept. So if you go back, you know, 1,000 years, you could look at like Scottish warriors, Vikings, American Indians, all these cultures, Hindu warriors, they all had these what's called rituals, more or less, to kind of to come back into the tribe or back into the community after combat. I want to say it's the Cherokee Nation had a mandatory 14-day wilderness period for braves coming back from combat before they could rejoin the village, because there's, again, can't explain it. They don't know. I don't have a science degree, but they don't know why. But something about being outdoors, about that kind of just calming, just therapeutic nature of it, helps people recover. And we could fast forward. One of the major reasons that President Teddy Roosevelt created the National Park System is to give the United States a place for like soldiers he served with in the Spanish-American War, a place to go outside and recreate that would always be wild, that would always be nature, right? Like, and which is, I like Teddy Roosevelt a lot because he's a wildly interesting person, but he's also the only person to win a Medal of Honor for, you know, for valor, for courage in battle, and a Nobel Peace Prize, which are, you know, diametrically opposed kind of awards. So just kind of, right? So like, so he understood it personally, why, you know, areas like Yosemite, Yellowstone, any of these wilderness areas, the Gila, just work for somebody who's been through, and it doesn't have to be, you know, PTSD or traumatic brain injuries or anything like that. It could be somebody going through a divorce or somebody, if you've lost a parent or lost a child, any kind of issue, it does seem to get better when you're outside.
Right.
And everybody read something by Hemingway in high school, probably Old Man and the Sea. But if you look at Ernest Hemingway, I mean, you look at his life. He was in World War I as an ambulance driver. He was in the Spanish-American War as a kind of an agent, I guess, an international agent, kind of doing anti-fascist stuff. He was in World War II as a reporter. He was in a couple of Eastern European wars as a reporter. Like, dude has seen some warfare. I mean, if you look at any of his books, like, there's always a fly fishing part. There's always a quail hunting part, or getting back to nature. And you could tell, like, that's what kind of helped him work through his battle, with what I'm assuming would be called PTSD, if somebody had that term at the time. But
sure.
But so we have these examples all over of how people use the outdoors to treat these symptoms. We just haven't thought of it from an organized stance so far. And we're getting into it. There's a commission happening with members of the Department of Defense, members of the VA, members of Congress, members of the Senate, members of the Department of Interior. They meet quarterly right now trying to figure out what's the best way to utilize America's vast public land, public resources for veterans. Outdoor adjunct therapy is the official term that they call it. And there's some compelling evidence that it worked. We just worked with a group, Rivers to Recovery, which is another great kind of veterans group teaching primarily fly fishing, but regular fishing as well, where they do, like, we're going to collect blood, we're going to collect spit, we're going to collect hair before an event, and then we're going to collect all those samples after an event, and then we're going to study, like, endorphins and dopamine. And again, I don't have a science degree, but just kind of showing these dramatic spikes in what makes you feel good after being outdoors, being outside, and participating in that kind of natural cycle. The most interesting thing to me, though, is kind of what we've seen as a unit. Like, again, we started with like 7 volunteers, and now those are my board of directors, and I'm the only like full-time employee. But the biggest piece of why, right, because you can do the time outdoors doing outdoor goat yoga. You can do time outdoors doing mountain biking, doing canoeing, all that stuff, and that's great, right? The difference is, like, so you can get time outdoors, you can get a community of veterans doing anything you want, right? Like, there's 100 answers there. The thing that hunting and fishing has that sets it apart is the conservation piece, is the mission, is you can leave these events, you can be a hunting or fishing enthusiast, and now there's a mission, right? It's making more public lands, right. It's making more elk, more turkeys, more white-tailed deer. It's managing this species. So now it's not only something that you're super passionate about because you've seen the effects of it on just your personal mental health or your personal physical health, but you can also now have that mission of how do I take others hunting? Like, we have it's 30% of our people that go to our event. That's part of our growth, is they've gone home and they're like, how do I start one of these in my community? Right. So that's how we get state volunteers all over the country, is because they go to one of our events and they want to replicate it. They want to show their friends. They want to show people they served with, hey, this is how I got better. Can you could do this too. You can come help and do this. But anyway, the mission is the key piece. That mission of conservation is another way to serve your country, right? Like, if you spent – go ahead. Sorry, I'm rambling.
No, you're good. You're good. But to the point that you're making there, I had just recently read about a study, and I didn't get into the details. I'm not a scientist either, so, you know, a lot of the details may not make a whole ton of sense to me. But they had a unit of Special Forces soldiers deployed, and I forget exactly where they were, but they would give them intel telling them that there was an imminent threat to their base and they needed to work to harden up the perimeter of the base. Mm-hmm. And, you know, deploy mines. It was in Vietnam, I think.
Sure.
Or maybe Cambodia, somewhere around there during that time period. Anyways, they needed to harden up the base and put more mines or whatever it is that they needed to do. They needed to go around the base and work on that. And they did some tests, like, before and after this whole event. And their some of the hormones or whatever, like the that causes a spike in fear and anxiety and all that kind of stuff, and in the calmness, they found that they were actually more calm after going through this whole experience. Mm-hmm. Of working to harden up the base, because, like you're saying, there's this mission that they had, and the work that they were doing had a calming effect. So I'm doing something proactive. Mm-hmm. To accomplish this mission and to defend our base or to protect something, whatever that something is. And in this case, I feel like that something is the conservation efforts. It's the outdoors. It's the environment that these animals live in. It's all of that. And people are out there and they're doing something proactive to help out in that regard. And so it may be, and again, I'm not a scientist, it may be very similar to what those soldiers experienced when they had that imminent threat coming. Yeah. And it turned out like the threat wasn't real, whether it was made up or not for the purpose of the study, I don't know. But it turns out that, you know, there was no attack on their base or anything, but they were able to measure before and after some of the hormones and everything else that was going on in their bodies. And they found that they were actually more calm, more relaxed after doing all that work, knowing that there was this threat coming their way. Yeah. They still were more relaxed. Yeah.
No, I haven't read that study, but it reminds me of a study very similar where they were just looking at, again, like the stress levels, anxiety spikes, and they found scientists or the VA or whoever was doing it was finding that the truck drivers for the Army, like, had higher levels of anxiety, higher levels of PTSD, because their primary threat for X amount of years in Afghanistan and Iraq was IEDs. It was that random kind of, like, you don't know when it's coming, but there just could be one. And that was, they had a higher level of anxiety than actual, units, like infantry units or special forces units that were forced on going out and finding the Taliban and finding Al-Qaeda, because they were doing something progressive. They had a mission. They were actively, in their minds at least, combating this threat and lowering their chances. Like, even though, like, truck driver, nothing could blow up on this road. You could be perfectly fine. Whereas a guy actively hunting the Taliban, like, his job is to go get into a firefight. But the guy doing the hunting was actually calmer than the guy who didn't know what was going to happen. So, no, it's a great point. It makes a lot of sense.
And this is going to probably sound stupid in the grand scheme of things, but I'm going to roll the dice and say it anyways. So if you ever watch the show Family Guy, there was this episode, and this was years ago. There's this episode where Stewie, the little baby, and Brian, the dog, they were like going back and forth, and Brian was saying that he was going to hit Stewie or beat him up or something like that, but he wasn't going to tell him when. It was going to happen at some point, but I'm not going to tell you when. And throughout the whole episode, Stewie's just like, just do it, man. Get it over with. I just want it now. Just do it. And at the very end of the episode, like, the very last thing that happened is he like pushed him in front of a bus or something. and like, that was you know, how the episode ended. Right. But it was driving him nuts. He was just like, if something's going to happen, I know it's going to happen. Just make it happen now and get it over with. Pull the Band-Aid off, whatever analogy you want to use. Like, let's just do it, because this is too much. I can't deal with that. And that makes total sense with the truck drivers who are driving along, not knowing whether or not something's going to happen. It's kind of like, it's a little bit different from the scenario I just described, because, like you said, they could be driving along the road and nothing could happen, or something really terrible could happen, but they have no idea, you know, and they have to be prepared for it either way.
So it's interesting. We have seen some positive effects. We do surveys, and we're working on getting more funding to really get some more science involved and do some of these like physiology samples. Like, we've worked with some psychiatrists, some psychologists to get out to these events and like do questionnaires and things like that. But I'm looking at a whiteboard in my office here, and in the bottom left corner, I've got 19 tally marks, and that's just 19 people since taking the job that have told me, like, hey, I was in a dark place and I didn't know where I was going, but it wasn't somewhere good. And this event helped me, right? Like, I don't want to be too dramatic, but like, I didn't commit suicide because of BHA, because the Armed Forces Initiative taught me how to do this. Now I have something to go do. I have a mission. I have somewhere where I can go help other people. Because it's one of those things, like, if you put out an event like, hey, if you're a veteran that needs help, come here, you'll get 10 people to show up. But if you describe an event of, hey, I have some veterans that need help, will you come help them? I'll get 100 people to show up, because veterans will show up to help the other veterans, but they will not show up to help themselves. So, like, a lot of it's like kind of marketing and describing that. But
And there was a guy I served with. I talked to him a couple of years ago about something like this, similar, getting outdoors and doing things like that. He's involved in, you know, whitewater rafting and all sorts of outdoor things. And to him, the outdoors, He described it, and I might butcher the way he said it, but to him, the outdoors is his church. It's his therapist. It's his, it's his place to just go and clear his head and let the worries of the world just kind of be left behind him. And he can go out and just enjoy nature and be outside. And so, yeah, I totally get that. Like, that makes a ton of sense that people would feel that way about getting outside and doing that. And so, you know, those 19 tally marks, I'm sure there's even more of those that, you know, probably people who just haven't told you.
Yeah. Or they told one of our volunteers, and I haven't had the story yet, and it's interesting, but again, it's why we do what we do, and makes it all worthwhile in the end.
Absolutely. With that, we're going to take another quick commercial break. When we get back, we're going to tell people a little bit more about where they can get involved with the Armed Forces Initiative and the programs that they offer. So stay tuned. The Hero Company is more than just a brand. It's a force of change. As a veteran-owned and operated company, they stand shoulder to shoulder with our brave servicemen and women. Their mission is to help provide service dogs for veterans suffering from PTSD, all at zero cost to them. Every purchase you make from The Hero Company helps fund this crucial initiative. They offer a wide range of products, including jewelry, apparel, keychains, stickers and decals, dog collars, and everyday carry items. It's a chance to wear your support and make a tangible difference. To date, The Hero Company has raised over $1.2 million, but their fight continues. Their goal is to raise $10 million to ensure veterans in need receive the service and companion animals that can change their lives. By buying from The Hero Company, you're not just making a purchase, you're intentionally being a hero for our heroes who need our help now. Join the mission. Visit this episode's show notes or theherocompany.co/driveon to shop and support our veterans. Together, we can make a heroic impact and honor those who fought for us. Trevor, before we wrap up this episode, could you tell people where they can go to find out more about the Armed Forces Initiative and the backcountry hunters and anglers and the programs that you guys offer and the types of stuff that you guys do?
Yeah, so and I'm terrible at social media, but we have some volunteers that are great at it. The best way is probably just go to BHA_AFI on Instagram or look up Armed Force Initiative on Facebook. That'll show you all of our recent projects, kind of pictures, whatever we're doing. If you have some extra time, you could go to backcountryhunters.org, which is BHA's main website. You can see all the great habitat work that BHA is doing. If you go to programs, Armed Force Initiative is right there. You can see specific stuff for us. We have a YouTube channel. We just dropped a big video called Expanding Boundaries, which is about our Boundary Waters trip in 2022. We've got another one that'll probably drop this November, which is going to be about the Alaska caribou hunt that's happening in August. But yeah, you can also just email armedforcesinitiative@backcountryhunters.org if you want more info, you want to talk to me. Yeah. And if you can't remember any of those websites or Instagram or anything, you could Google BHA. The first thing is going to be Boston Housing Authority, so don't click that one. The second thing is like beta hydraulic acid. Don't click that one either. But the third thing is Backcountry Hunters and Anglers. Click the third one. That's that'll get you there.
And to make it even easier, I will put the links to everything that you mentioned, your website and the social media and everything like that. I'll put that all in the show notes for the listeners. So definitely take a look at the show notes there to get involved. You know, whether it's getting involved with some of the programs that they offer, I'm sure like any other organization, you guys are probably looking for volunteers
and always.
Donations and that type of thing as well. So I'm sure that's probably information like that is on the website as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Always looking for people to give us money and always looking for people to volunteer or even if you just want to go learn how to hunt and fish, like get on the waiting list. Some things have longer waiting lists than others, but yeah, there's no part of the country other than Hawaii right now where you're not 90 minutes or less from a BHA trip. So.
Oh, that's awesome. So that's super accessible for just about anybody to get involved with. Unfortunately, Hawaii might be a little bit longer.
One. But, and you can show up in jeans and a t-shirt. Like we will tell me that you're showing up in jeans and a t-shirt, but we could provide gear. We could provide all that stuff for you.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that. Like, is that something that you need to have your own, you know, firearms or, or fishing poles?
Nope. We make all the, we make all the gear happen. I mean, if you'd like to show up with your own stuff, like you're very welcome to, cause that's what you'll be hunting or fishing with. And comfortability is important.
Sure.
But, if you don't have it, you need a fly rod, you need some regular fishing stuff. You need firearms. Like, we can make that happen. Again, like you got to tell me, don't just show up in jeans and say, well, I heard it on a podcast, like tell me before you get there that you need stuff and we'll make sure you have it. But, yeah, the only two things that we are not allowed, and that's our insurance company's thing, is we can't provide travel to an event because if you get in a car crash or something, like then I think we're liable. And so we can't provide travel and we cannot buy your hunting or fishing license. So those are the only two things we can't. Everything else we take care of.
I think that's easy enough. You know, veterans have been moving stuff and themselves for for quite some time. They should be able to figure out how to get to a place and how to make a simple purchase, like a hunting or fishing.
And we do classes before an event on how to purchase it. Like, I'll bring put you all on Zoom and walk you through the exact process. Like, not a problem. We just can't physically be the ones that buy it.
And I know a lot of places are super easy. They have online places where you just go to this place, you buy it, and print off the license or the certificate, whatever it is that they provide you. And it's just too
super
easy.
Super simple.
Like, it'll take you 10 minutes to do, right? So, well, Trevor, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I really do appreciate the work that you're doing, that the Armed Forces Initiative and everything that you guys are taking part in. Because I really do believe that despite the fact that you only have 19 tick marks up on your whiteboard there, I'm sure there's many more people who have similar stories and maybe just haven't taken the time to share it with you. So thank you again.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.